Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. Maybe I seem a bit confused, but baby, I got you pegged. Mercy. I've just been watching the TV series Frasier, and specifically the series from 1993-1994. That is the first series. And it got me thinking, and this is something that my friend History Debunk was actually talked about recently on his channel as well, but only briefly. It got me thinking, were the 1990s better than life now? Was 1996, 1995, 1994 better than life now in 2026, at least in the UK? Was it better? Indeed, was it really the best time in many ways to be alive in human history? And if it was, why is this the case? And that's what I want to look at today. But before I do that, could you do me a favour? Could you please subscribe? Could you subscribe on YouTube? Could you hit the like button? Could you hit the bell button? Could you leave a comment, whatever, share the video? And could you subscribe to my Substack? That's johnnyheretic.com, where I put all the base stuff I don't put on YouTube, in-person interviews, vlogs, and where if you like what I do, you can support for the cost of a pint of beer a month. And I wouldn't have had to have done that in the 1990s either, because probably I'd have just been working in academia, because things would have been more laid back and funky. But anyway, let's look at this. Let's look at life in the 1990s. What was it about that? Are we nostalgic about it because there's a general 30-year rule? If you go back to the 1980s, for example, there was Back to the Future, or there was It, and they were nostalgic for the 50s. The remake of It is nostalgic for the 80s. It's the 80s where you go back in time. So it's this kind of 30-year rule. Or is it something deeper than that? Is there more to it? And I think it may well be that the 1990s was kind of, in many ways, just a uniquely positive, pleasant period to be alive. Now, I want to look at some of the reasons why. First of all, if you look at the generation that was in charge in the 1990s, at the beginning of the 90s, there were still some people that were born in the 20s. And by the end of it, they're born in the 30s and perhaps the early 40s, something like that. So it's pre-boomer. It's a generation that has suffered. It's a generation that has fought in World War II, who themselves were raised by a generation who was fought in World War I. And if they were too young to have fought in it, then they probably would have had conscription after the war. They would have been militarized. They would have known what suffering was. They would have known what pain was. They would have been through, at least even if they were born in the late 30s, they would have lived through a war. They would have lived through mortality salience. They would have lived through the possibility of death. They would have lived through the possibility of their father being killed, or their house being blown up, or them being taken away from their parents and as evacuees, or whatever it happened to be. They lived through intense suffering. And in the wake of the war, the standard of living increased very, very quickly, very, very rapidly in the wake of the economic boom after the war. So the standard of living for those that were born before the war was very considerably lower. They would have known real physical and psychological hardship. They would have known the poorer ones anyway, outside lose, that's a given. Not having enough food, food being incredibly expensive in relation to wages, real grinding poverty for a lot of people. And even if they were very, very rich, they would have been through the public school system, which modeled itself on Plato's ideas about how, you know, about how the aristocracy shouldn't know their parents, about the Spartans and so forth. And it was a brutal and deeply unpleasant system of violence and abuse, essentially, that was meant to prepare them for the hardships of life and running the empire. And that is what that generation that were born in the 1930s, that were running the country in the 1990s, that's what they'd been through. They'd suffered. They'd seriously suffered. And that means, of course, that they're not going to be decadent. They're going to realise that high living standards that we had are something fragile. They're going to also be inculcated with certain ideas that were prominent at the time: ethnocentrism, patriotism, religion, the idea that there's something greater, the idea that there's something eternal, the idea that you should sacrifice your own good for the good of the group, that sort of noblesse oblige, that sort of thing. That generation therefore, been through this suffering, been through this pain, been through this inculcation with traditional values, therefore acted, I suspect, for the good of their country, and they did things with an eye on the future rather than immediate gratification, with an eye on the past and the idea that they're part of some ancient civilization, and they're just a chain in that civilization, and they must keep going towards the future, and they mustn't betray it for individual personal interests or for financial interests or for reasons of money or whatever. There were these deeper, stronger, more eternal traditionalist values, if you like, that were implicit in people of that age, and they were running the society, and therefore they weren't going to do things like allow mass immigration to completely overwhelm the country, and they weren't going to do things like run the country in their own interests rather than in the interests of the people. Okay, some of them of course did, but they were more likely to have this semi-religious kind of idea that of noblesse oblige, that they are there to serve the people and do the patriotic good by their people. So those are the people in charge. That's the first thing. And that they'd known suffering, they'd known pain. This brings out religious instincts. It brings out ethnocentric instincts. Go forward a generation, that's not there. You just have wealthy people. So it's like the equivalent of being run by a public schoolboy who's been through suffering and pain, instead of a day school private schoolboy who's just wealthy and has never known the suffering. That's the change between that generation and the boomer. So I think that's the first thing that's very important. It means they're not decadent. The second thing is that the standard of living was high, but the highest it had ever been, and there wasn't any mass migration or anything like that yet. So the population was in line with the infrastructure to cope with that population. What you've had subsequently is huge levels of immigration, which have reduced wages and which have brought about basically just decadent things that we don't need, like people that can deliver takeaways to you and all this kind of nonsense that should be banned. And the population was congruent with the level of public service that was there to serve it. So it went without saying that if you were very ill, very, very ill, the doctor would come to your house. The doctor wasn't overwhelmed with appointments all day. He'd have free time where he could do things like make house calls and that sort of thing. The infrastructure was in line with, indeed probably superior to, that needed by the level of population at the time. And so this meant that living standards in so many ways were just better. A young family could of course afford a house. Why wouldn't they be able to afford a house? There was more than enough housing for the population, and there was more than enough housing in desirable areas. As well, there was much less competition because there wasn't this idea that you have to educate everybody and send them to university. So people did people weren't overeducated. You didn't have this nonsense situation where everybody had degrees. People did jobs in line with what they were intellectually capable of doing. And it was understood that we only needed a certain number of graduates. And this meant there wasn't overpromotion of elites. And this meant there wasn't inter-elite competition. And this meant there wasn't all the conflict we have in academia now with people being cancelled and thrown out for having different opinions, so that they can be replaced by other people that want their place in academia or whatever it happens to be. Their education and the level of education and the level of elite positions was in line with the level of people that felt that they could have those elite positions. So this was another good thing. The third thing is that, yes, there was some immigration at that point, but there wasn't that much. Now, this brings us back to a balance that Raymond Cattell talks about in his book Beyondism. He says if a society has no immigration, well, it just kind of stagnates. It has no new ideas from outside, no innovative people coming in, which is nothing. But if it has too much immigration, it balkanizes. Now, I think that what England was then, let's say it was something like 95% English, was probably the right balance, because food was cheaper in the 90s than in the 80s. There was more variety. There was more, if you like, things like Indian food or whatever. There was much more of that. It was more interesting, less boring, perhaps, than it had been in the 80s or the 70s, when there was absolutely no foreigners and no anything. But it was a tiny, tiny amount. And that perhaps is the optimum. That perhaps is the optimum, that you are slightly open to outsiders and slightly open to new things, but not too much that everything falls apart. And I suspect that's what it was like in the 90s. Until 1997, that was the turning point. England was something like 94% white. By the way, Scotland is about that now. And things seemed to work well. Also, in terms of the ideology, there's always going to be an ideology that takes over a society. It's the nature of humans that some of us are going to be slightly mentally unstable and are therefore going to adopt the set of values, the dominant set of values, to an extreme degree, and purity signal or virtue signal about it, and thus push things in a particular direction, either a right-wing direction or a left-wing direction, depending on our situation. And it will go on being in a right-wing direction until enough people feel that their individual needs are not met, that they rebel, and it will go on in a left-wing direction until basically there's chaos, and then there'll be a right-wing backlash. Now, I think that what you had at that point was that the conservative system of thinking that had been running away since the Victorian era was collapsing, was in the descendant, and the individually oriented values of equality and harm avoidance, they were in the ascendant, but they weren't very high yet. They weren't very influential yet. At the same time that the conservative sets of values, i.e. group orientation, obedience to traditional authority, in-group loyalty and purity with regard to sexual issues and that sort of thing, they were at a very low ebb as well. So you had a situation where there was a really, really quite extreme freedom. Only 10 years before, you still had a situation where, in the late 70s, where kids that were illegitimate were put up for adoption because it was that shameful that you would have an illegitimate child. So that system had completely fallen apart. But interestingly, we had a generation that were in charge, that dominated things, that had been brought up under that system. So they'd been brought up under the really the high point of this kind of strict morality, purity signalling, sexual repression kind of system. And then it had fallen apart in the 60s. There'd been this, if you want to look at it in sort of broader terms, these five moral foundations that humans have. We have the group-oriented foundations of in-group loyalty, traditional authority, obedience, and purity, and the individually-oriented values of equality, because if you're an individual, you want more, so you want equality, and harm avoidance, because you want to don't want harm to you. Have these five moral foundations. We'd had runaway signalling of the group-oriented foundations, and then a shift in society had happened. I've looked at reasons why. I think it's partly genetic and to do with dysgenics, but a shift in society had happened, and then we moved to the individually-oriented, our shift over to the individually-oriented foundations quite quickly in the 60s, and then we competitively signalled those. But of course, then there's an optimum period of freedom where one system has collapsed and another system is on the rise, and therefore and the previous system can be heavily critiqued and made fun of and so forth. And that's what we see. We see this period of creativity in music, in art, in a lot of innovation in science, but in music, in art, in comedy, in all kinds of areas. People feel free and they can experiment and they can do whatever they like. And the society thinks this is a good idea because the society still has some of these conservative ideas about the importance of doing things for the greater good and doing things for the eternal and beauty is a good in itself. It still has some of those ideas that are still there. And so that optimum combination means you end up with brilliant, original, groundbreaking stuff like Monty Python or whatever. And that's because they were of that generation where they were brought up still in the conservative society, but then they came of age as it fell apart and were able to be highly, highly creative in a way that they wouldn't have been able to have been. There would have been far more restrictions the previous generation. We are now in a situation where there are heavy restrictions on what you can do in the arts or what you can write about in the newspapers. But these are restrictions based on equality and harm avoidance, left-wing values, rather than restrictions based on right-wing values. But there was this period of freedom. And I would suggest that may have been optimum in the 90s. And that's why you get brilliant things that we can't do again. We either don't have the optimum combination of creativity, creative abandon, and intelligence and freedom to be able to do those things again. If they remade Frasier, they'd have to, of course, write into it to the non-white characters or homosexual characters or whatever it happens to be. They couldn't help but use it as a vehicle for propaganda, and as a consequence, you wouldn't be able to suspend disbelief, and it wouldn't be funny. And the same would be the case if they remade. It was the case when they remade The Fall and Rise of Reggie Perrin using Martin Clunes. Absolutely was the case that they had to have certain non-white characters, such as a guy called Nick Muhammad, with whom I was at university. And so it wouldn't work. So it was optimum in that way as well. also, we were very, we just had the end of, finally, we had peace. Finally, we had peace. We'd had the World War, and then we'd had the Cold War, which lasted right up until 1991. And then, okay, well, then there was the Balkans War, well, that only affected a small area. But in general, we had peace. We had peace for the first time. We had peace. And in that decade, we were so positive about the future. You had these decadent ideas such as the end of history. But we had peace until 2001 and September the 11th and whatever. And then suddenly we realized we didn't have peace. But for the whole of the 1990s, we basically had peace. And so there was something. And then there was just this fact that we were moving into the new millennium, something new, something amazing, something special. And there was just this very, very positive attitude. And then simply, as I said, I think I mentioned earlier, the prices were reasonable. Homes, food, whatever, they were all reasonable. And this is encapsulated in this positive attitude that was felt at the time in things like Frasier, also Game On, which was a British comedy about flatmates living in London. Could they afford to live in London now? Probably not. So for all of these reasons, I think that the 1990s was a brilliant time to be alive. Yes, there were some restrictions on freedom, but nothing compared to the restrictions that exist now. Now, there were fewer restrictions on free speech if you go back to the 70s. That's true. They didn't have the 1986 Public Order Act yet. But then, of course, it was a lot poorer. There was a lot less variety. Standards of living were much lower. And the influence of the old conservative order was still higher. And people were still putting up kids that were adopted, that were illegitimate for adoption and things like that. So it was more restricted in that sense. So I think it may well be the case that the 1990s or the 1980s, but then there was more economic problems in the 80s, I suppose. So no, let's say the 1990s really was the best time to be alive. And it was a much better time to be alive than now. And the only thing that is probably better now is the internet. But if you've never had it, then you don't miss it. And we had the infrastructure in place pre-internet. You had proper libraries, citizens' advice bureaus, phone books, more phones. We didn't. You wouldn't have missed it until you had it. I cope perfectly well. I barely used the internet at all until I moved to Finland in 2005. Before that, I didn't really use the internet. So we lived without it. So I feel rather sorry for these people that are now in their mid to late 20s, that were born in the late 90s or even in the 2000s. And never experienced the 90s. I think there's so many ways in which the 90s probably were, on many different measures, the best time to be alive as an English person in human history. In a lot of ways. In some ways, we didn't have the empire, or whatever. But in a lot of ways. Anyway, do comment below if you remember the 90s. If you don't, then I'm less interested because you don't remember the 90s. If you do remember the 90s, then do comment below. Am I right about this, or is there something I've missed? I'd be genuinely interested to know. So let's talk about it. So I thank you, chaps. Thank you for listening. I hope this is a bit of interest. And goodbye.
Are you ready for the future of the West?